So what I wanted to do is I wanted to, my assignment in this morning of lectures is to really discuss, try to get a sense of what we're saying when we say these tefillos on Rosh Hashanah, which I think is an important thing. If you want to make davening meaningful, one thing is you really have to understand what you're saying. And now when I say you have to understand what you're saying, it means looking beyond the article translation. Right? The article translation is translating the words that the sages wrote into English. But that's not enough. That's incomplete.
It's not actually understanding what it means.
Right, exactly. It's just telling you, you translated the words. But the question is, are you really getting a sense of what the message of Chazal is? So I thought we'd look at a couple of these. Maybe we'll finish them, maybe we won't. I don't care. But I wanted to show you the way I approach tefillah and how, that's why I recommend you guys to sit down with the machzor beforehand, right? And you should really question. I mean, the objective is to question. If you question what they're writing, and you think of an answer, it becomes a lot more meaningful. So rather than just be robots and regurgitate what they wrote, to make it an internal experience, it's important to really understand what you're saying. So I'll give you an example. And again, I want to hear what you guys have to say. Forget, I'll take a vibe shot, but we'll see if you can pick up on what I think the questions are and a possible approach other than Chaim. So, just as an example, this is the Abud Raham. Okay, see this? Rishon, he wrote a lot of interesting halacha stuff in here, and he wrote I won't call it parish, but there's a lot of interesting interpretations and concepts about tefillah that exist in here, and it's fairly easy to read. This has vowels in it for people who have a difficult time reading Hebrew. Highly recommend it. So sometimes I'll turn to him to assist in an upshot. All right, so take a look at the art scroll, page 70, okay, or slash 71, right? Okay. So this tefillah, Rabbi Shmuel David will mention this, but this tefillah, we actually, the minhag of the yeshiva is to say this tefillah in every davening. So every time we say Shemoneh Esrei, whether it be Mincha, Maariv, Shachris, Musaf, we'll always be reciting this tefillah. So, and it should be fairly familiar. So what's this tefillah say? It says, Elokeinu Melech Yevoseinu, Miloch al kol ha'olam kulo b'chvodecha. Okay, I'll go right over the English. Okay, our God and the God of our forefathers. So far, so good? Right, okay. Reign over the entire universe in your glory. Okay? So far, so good? Okay. V'hinase al kol ha'aretz b'karecha, right? Be exalted over all the world in your splendor. V'ofar b'hadar gonazecha al kol yoshvei sevar arzecha, right? Reveal yourself in the majestic grandeur of your strength over all the dwellers of your inhabited world. Okay, so at this point, I like to stop. And what? Now what? Does this make sense? What are we saying here? This is not a trick question. So why, okay, so Gabriel says, we're talking about how God rules over the world. So what should the tefillah have said?
You rule over
the world. Right, be concise, right? Why not be concise? God, you rule over the world, right?
It's not poetic.
Okay, so that's one possibility.
Well, saying that God, you rule over the world, is more declared
than this is more. No, I understand, but I'm saying, in other words, why not just have the first line? Melocha kol olam kulo b'chvodecha. I mean, to me, when I look at that line, I say to myself, okay, well, that's, we're asking for God to present his kingship over the world, right? So I would...
Revelation, in a sense, like, as in, rather than the hidden way that God is in charge right now, for it to be obviated.
Oh, now it's interesting. So now you're slipping in, you already slipped in the theme, which is God is acting as a judge, which I agree with, but hold on to that.
I didn't even notice that. I was just saying, like, make it obvious rather than him.
I agree, but right. Oh no, I agree. It doesn't say that. Yeah. It doesn't mention anything about God judging. Okay, what other questions would you ask? What are you smiling about over there, Shana Bed?
I'd say, why are we having a Natasha in here?
Yeah. So you mean in general? So that's a good question in overall, but I'm not so concerned about that. I care more about, that's like a halachic question. I care more about like what these words are saying.
Fine. Why is there a
You mean for God of God's machas? So I would respond and say that's a theme of Rosh Hashanah. The theme of Yom HaDin is we want God's kingship to be expressed over the world. That's a good question. Okay. Yes.
I mean, these are the three key points that we've gotten, which we use to express how we want God to kind of reveal himself to us in the world. May he first open the universe in your glory, saying that even the lowest.
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Okay, so what Jonathan's saying, okay, is he's saying these seem to be three, you're saying the three examples.
Yes.
Of God's manifestation of his kingship over the world. right? Rather than say that there's one example, there are three. Okay, but now that's good. Now, but in saying that, now you kind of walk into a trap, though, because now what do you have to answer?
Why those three?
Okay, not just why those three, but no, what else can you ask?
Why not any other?
Okay, why not any other? Fine. And what else? Well, I mean, if you look at the words, what's the... What? Well, that's what Gabriel kind of mentioned that before. I don't know if it's Alex or Gabriel. One of you guys mentioned that before. One should be sufficient. But if you have three, you must say that each one's teaching you a unique idea. Right? I mean, I think that's a fair assumption. So again, look what we've done. We've taken three phrases, right? And we've said to ourselves, okay, well, what's the necessity of having three? What do we learn from each phrase? Is there something to learn from each phrase? Right? We could take Tully's approach and just say, it's poetic. But that's so boring, right? And thankfully, Abu Ram doesn't agree with you. Right? He was poetic. So what does he say? What does he say? So he says like this. He says, sometimes you'll find an answer, right, that actually presents more difficulties. So what he says is that he explains that the idea is that what's the difference between saying Vihinase and Vohofar? Vihinase meaning be exalted over the world, right? Versus revealing yourself. So he says one is referring to God as Dayan, as judge, and the other one's referring to God as show faith, which means
dictator.
Oh, that's a problem.
Judge.
Yeah. Judge. Okay? In fact, in Halacha, the terms are used synonymously. Right? So what do you mean? So his answer presents more problems. So in other words, he says the second two, he says the number two and number three phrase, let's say number two is referring to God as Dayan, as judge, and the third one is referring to God as Shofet, as judge. Well, how does that help us? All right, that sounds very nice, but how does that help us? How does that help us understand what he's saying? Right?
Shofet is more like a single person just deciding things, and Dayan is like a part of it, like the triad or...
Okay, but then how would you take that and fit that into whatever's, like, what does that have to do with being exalted over the world in your splendor and revealing yourself in the majestic grandeur of your strength over the dwellers of your inhabited world? So you got to take that.
I didn't say it means that.
Oh, but if he said it means that, our job is to try to figure out how do we draw the line between judge and whatever the heck is going on over here.
Wait.
That's the challenge, yes.
You can only understand that he's the, I mean, to some extent, the idea that he's judging means that he's judging everyone, not just everyone, and this idea that to a certain order, but having you have to recognize him before you knew it, have to recognize that he is the God, he is the creator, he is the one, and therefore we start with this to kind of bring ourselves to that path.
Okay. Right, so what's each one telling you?
So like, the first one is saying, be exalted over the world in your splendor, meaning that, wait, no, that's not the first one. The first one is the universe in your glory, meaning even the highest or the lowest of all people, be exalted over the world in your splendor, meaning that in God you have to recognize him in the entire world, not just, and then reveal yourself in the majestic grandeur of your strength over all the dwellers of your inhabited world. That's the one I'm actually having a little trouble with, but everything else I had.
Okay. Anyone else? Akabes? How's it going?
Did he drop it down on that show?
What?
It goes down on show.
Down on show, yeah. Maybe. Okay.
We have
it's true. Okay. Okay. But again, how's... Okay. Okay. Is this a serious answer?
Well, no. I mean, look. if you look at the words, it's actually trying to rhyme many of the things. So there's clearly some...
Sure. Absolutely. And no one's disputing the fact that it's one of the unfortunate things of the fact that we don't speak Hebrew, and even Israelis, they don't even appreciate this. There is a certain quality. There's a certain... Like you see in the Slichos... Or the Putin, we don't appreciate the literary qualities going on.
You're saying the same words over and over and over and over.
That's a different issue. That you can I can read the Catch in the Rye a million times and still every single time appreciate the literary quality.
No, that's not what I mean. It means like you know, like say the same thing.
You mean people mumbling and every so often saying a word out loud?
Like there's some
I'm not following you.
Some Putin or whatever, which like is like same word, like just.
Yeah, but there's still an idea there. There's got to be some concept it's trying to present.
There's a syntax there. All
right, so, yeah.
I think I can make fun of this here. I don't know. Should I say it or not?
Mm-mm. Well, yeah, he went there Friday night.
Oh, you were there Friday night?
And so was Josh.
Yeah, yeah. And so was? Josh Harwitz? Oh, Kaplan. Oh, yeah. Do you remember? No, he doesn't remember. Look at him. He's like, but yeah. All right. So let's start from this. Yeah, but it was a little more. It was more condensed. Okay. All right. So let me ask you this. So the first thing you say is melocha kol olam kulo bichvadecha. Right. That's the first statement. Okay. So if I asked you the idea, there's an interesting idea about Rosh Hashanah. Like Sajigun mentioned that when you showed me that he says that we blow the shofar to announce the coronation of God as king. Now, when did God become king? King in big capitals with a capital K.
Okay.
What? No, okay, no, that's true. Always been king, I know. It's true, but a king usually needs subjects, right?
Yeah. So
One second. What day is Rosh Hashanah on? In
creation.
So you could say, so his coronation as king came on at the point of creation, okay? All right, but let's use modern cosmology. So, but you have a large period of time between the creation of the universe and man, right? A few billion years here or there, give or take, right?
Only a few billion.
Just a few billion, right? So the question is, so the idea is that one way of viewing God as Melech, right, is exhibited in his ability to create a universe. There's a certain power that God has as Melech in the creation of the universe itself. But that's not what we're looking for on Rosh Hashanah. We're not relating to God as Yotzer or Vorech Hoshe, Amir La'aretz. What day are we supposed to spend reflecting on the idea of God as creator? Shabbos. That's what we're... I mean, let's certainly call the Rambam. It's a good question if the Rambam meant you're supposed to study physics or the philosophy of physics, which itself is an interesting question. But... So, Ellie, that's something... Ellie, your father and I got into a big discussion about that.
Philosophy of metaphysics?
Yeah, or like, what does the Rambam say you're supposed to study Mice of Bracious on Shabbos? Does that mean I should get out like my Stephen Hawking and just start reading about, black holes? It's like a funny idea, you know? Anyway, but the point is that you reflect on God as creator, right, on Shabbos, right? But that's not what you're doing today. As Alex mentioned before, how are you supposed to looking at what's your view of God now? As judge, right? So Moloch, the Malchus that we're talking about here is not insofar as God's control of the universe, rather God's control over who?
Us.
Now. Now comes Dayan and Shofet, okay? So to make that work, let's listen to the words, okay? One of the words is talking about be exalted over all the world in your splendor. That's one. And then reveal yourself in the majestic grandeur of your strength. Okay? Notice the two words here. Splendor. What splendor evokes what kind of imagery? Tully, Mr. Poetry. Yeah. What kind of imagery does splendor evoke?
Splendor.
Splendor, yeah.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Wondrous. Wow. Awe, right? Whereas strength implies what?
Power.
Power, right?
Yeah.
Almost a sense of what?
Fear,
right? Goliath, okay, that's great. I think we should stop. I don't want to hear any more images. I'm afraid how deep into your subconscious is going. We'll stick with that. It's okay. We're unrepressed. So maybe it's like this. I would ask you, maybe there's two ideas that we're supposed to have of God as being judged, okay? When I look at the word splendor, like we're supposed to revel in this idea of God, the splendor of God's justice, what I think about is the fact that whatever the idea of God's justice is, right, it's not human justice. It's a perfect justice, which, now I know that's very difficult to understand. One thing that we struggle with, and it's a struggle that exists in Rosh Hashanah throughout the year, is how do we understand how God's justice works? We don't, okay? We try to, right? We try to create causal relationships between things that happen in the world. You know, like, you have anything from the foolish, where someone says, the reason why the Holocaust happened is because of X, right? Or it's like someone mentioned before to me, like, all the calamities in the world are because of tznius, lack of tznius, you know, like that kind of thing. So that's just, but again, what are we trying to do? As absurd as that is, and it's not just absurd, it's arrogant, the reason why we're drawn into that is because we're trying to make sense of the causal correlation. We want to say that it can't just be things happen randomly. No, I understand, but it can't just be things are random. We're driven by this idea that it should make sense to us, that there's a symmetry in justice. But in truth, it's hard for us to understand that, right? So the idea of splendor is that we have to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's justice is perfect. That's the awe. That's the beauty. The beauty is that we know there's some perfection in God's justice. Do we understand how that's supplied? No, we don't understand how it's supplied. But the idea of strength is this is the part that also bothers people, and I think that's why tefillah challenges us. It challenges you to get over these certain emotions you're so entrenched with. One of them is that you think things should work a certain way. I always like when I hear guys your age say, it's not fair. Who said things have to be fair? It's like a funny assumption we have about things being fair. Life, right?
No, life isn't fair.
Life isn't fair. But it's not fair only because you have a certain assumption of what fair should be. What?
It's the ultimate justice that everything's fair then. Like, isn't that what justice sort of is?
Well, it depends what we mean by, again, in human justice, no.
Yeah, most of the time. No.
Okay, so then how would you define justice?
That's a good question. We don't know. We all we know about HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
So why
should
I'm not
going to
care about
second.
Justice. I don't want justice.
Right.
I want human
so that's the second one. That's the idea of the strength. You see, the idea of the strength is that whereas man, I'm not picking on you, whereas man searches to escape, right, the yoke of justice as applied by God, he can't. Right?
Why would I want it?
That's the whole point. It's irrelevant if you want it or not. It's not a choice. It's part of being a created being. It makes you part of that system. It'd be like saying, I don't want to breathe air. I don't want to breathe air. I'm so sick of oxygen. I'm sick of it. Right? But that would be absurd. You can't say I'm sick of oxygen. See, in a similar sense, you can't escape the idea of God's justice. So wait, let me finish. So on the one hand, so I'd say there's two ideas, two challenges you face when you understand the idea of God as judge. One phenomenon is you don't understand how it works. And you have to be willing to tolerate that. All right, that's something that frustrates man. You have to tolerate that. The other thing you have to accept is that you can't escape it. That the strength of God, this strength idea, so to speak, is that you're subject to judgment from God. It's inescapable. You can't hide in like a cave and assume that God won't, you know, that you'll avoid whatever punishment's due to you. Okay, I'm saying unfortunate in quotes. Unfortunately, in quotes, you're a created being, and being a created being means you're subject to the way this universe works, just the way it is. Part of how the universe works is that we're subject to His judgment. Okay, so that's how I view, just my own opinion, how I view the first phraseology in what do you call it, in this tefillah. Okay, any questions before I go to the next point?
How do you view it?
In other words, the first step is that I see God, the transition from God from creator to judge, and then when it comes to understanding God as judge, there's two avenues. One idea is that the willingness to recognize we can't understand how His justice works. Right, that's we're in awe of it. It's like wow, it's like a system lahavdil. It's like trying to understand relativity. Right, in other words, like Einstein always said, or one of the physicists. They said, how many people in the world understand relativity? He's like three. Right, but you're in awe of it. You just don't understand how it works, but you know of it. You know it's amazing. That's the idea of God's justice on one hand. The other idea is that He exhibits His strength. Where we say to God, yes, we're ready to be judged, because normally speaking, we don't want to subject ourselves to a divine judgment. We want to avoid it, right? Not to be too anthropomorphic, but it's like, you know, the imagery of like, you know, being struck down, so to speak. Not that happens, right? So we have to be willing to accept that. We have to recognize that yes, we're subject to His authority. Okay? Yes.
With our ability to understand math and our ability to understand Torah, why would God, you know, give us the ability to understand and learn, like kind of put the ceiling at right under His understanding of judgment?
That's a good question. I would say that many great people, including Moshe Rabbeinu, wanted to understand how it worked. That's a good question. I will tell you this, though. Part of the amazingness, I mean, this comes up in Zichronos also, but part of the majesty of God's justice is the knowledge that He has of all the particulars. In other words, He has a complete knowledge, right? That means, in other words, it's hard for all of us, when I say you, I mean, man, to appreciate the infinite amounts of cause and effects that are always present around us, right, that we are not aware of, but that play a direct role in how your life goes. The example I always like to give is that this example that comes up in tefillah, but like, what do you want to go into in college? What's your...
Government, diplomacy, and sustainability.
Beautiful, okay. So now, you go to college, we just call it government, okay? Gov, okay. You go to college to go into gov, right? And now what happens? You work really hard in college, right? And then it's time for you to go to some graduate program, right? And you're so excited to have your interview. It's at Harvard Graduate School for Gov, right? And it's the day of your interview, right? And the interview goes really well, and you get in. So you say to yourself, look at how hard you worked, right? You did everything that you were supposed to do to get to this point. But in truth, you do realize that had you spent an extra second tying your shoelace that morning, it could have been that things were completely different. And I'm just talking about on a level that you perceive, but we're so susceptible to just the slightest nuance of cause and effect. I'll put it like on a scale that we can relate to. Like take the past hurricane, the Hurricane Irma. So try tracking a hurricane, right? So you see that like the slightest deviation from wind makes it go an inch one way, an inch another way, and you're spared as a result. Take that on a scale of magnitude of the universe, and you realize there's very little knowledge you have of cause and effect. But God, He's all-knowing. So since He knows all the particulars, every cause and effect, it's like He's able to judge us correctly, so to speak. It's only through His knowledge, you know? It's like when something happens to you, and you're convinced that right now this thing is terrible, right? Which is a normal human reaction. But then, like, you know, those stories were like, 5 years later, you realize, why it was so good that happened to me, you know? We're quick to, it's human nature. We're quick to create correlations and causality. We're quick to say, if this happened, it must be because of this. Be very careful doing that, okay? It's tempting, it's so tempting. Unless, what's the other side?
No, it's
That's I. I'm saying, what do you mean?
You know what we were talking about last night.
You mean scientists?
No, a book set.
Of what? No, I really don't know. I apologize. Like of.
No, so correlation and causality could be used for like by scientists. It could also be used by people who don't disagree with scientists.
I agree. Okay. Yeah.
And sometimes by
I'm starting to I'm starting to hear that there's an episode of that on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
So like, if God just so I'd be like, I don't understand. Like, then is it possible? Like, we're all sort of like doomed to failure, or whatever.
Doomed to failure. Why?
You know, like for example, if you like. If it's justice, like, let's say, like, to put this, I guess, in, like, you know, like, fine, like, the Holocaust, let's say, like, if, like, it's justice, like, okay, like, well, I'll kill, like, you know, like, 10 million people, and, like, that's, like, you know, somehow that's, like, for the better, like, is it possible that, like, we're technically then doomed to failure, but, like, in our own perception, but then, like, for somehow that's...
I don't understand why we're doomed to failure. The good news is that we have, according to Jewish theology, right, caveat, we have free will. Right, and the ability to perfect ourselves and to follow the word of God, etc. And then we merit a positive result as if we follow God's word. We're flawed creatures. We weren't created flawed, so to speak, but we're flawed creatures, but we have the ability to improve ourselves. So unfortunately, we haven't. You know. But I don't think we're doomed to failure. That's like fatalistic. Like, that's it. We can't escape it.
I mean, we can. It's his justice.
Right. No, since God judges you based on schar va'onesh, meaning that you always judge based on your actions. We just don't understand how the particulars work. Because you don't understand the particulars of the system, and it's very difficult for us to understand let's be hyperbolic, if the infant gets killed, you know, innocent baby, right? Of course, I'm not trying to minimize it, right? But at the same time, it's like, it strikes us as being unjust because we have a certain perception of what justice should be like. Just like when you're used to a certain system of morality, and then the Torah presents challenges that sense of morality, what are you supposed to do? It's difficult, you know? To just say, I submit myself to the system of God is a challenge. But it doesn't mean we're doomed to fail.
It's possible that we are.
It doesn't seem that way because we have this promise of the Geula. And it seems like at some point we'll be Chozer B'Tshuva. It seems that way. Like there'll be like a leader, a Mashiach. That's a different separate conversation. But there'll be someone who unites us, that kind of thing. Yes, I'll agree with you one thing. It seems very, if you look at the state of things, on the one hand, I can see a lot of positives. But yes, on the other hand, I see a lot of problems. Yes, that I'll agree with. Okay, let's do the next part. Okay, so far so good? Good? Okay. Now listen to this. In the same paragraph, then he says, as a result, when God's kingship is expressed, v'yeda kol pa'ul ki atah fe'alto, which means, let everything that has been made know that you are its maker. Okay? V'yavin kol yatsur ki atah yitzrato, let everything that has been molded understand that you are its molder. Okay? V'yomar kol asher neshama b'yapo, and everyone who has life in his nostrils will say, Hashem Elokei Shem Melech HaMelechim Achasov HaKol Mashallah. Will proclaim God as king. So now, what questions would you ask here?
What
if any?
What's the difference between Pa'ul and Yatzur?
Well, that's the big question. What's the difference between Pa'ul, which means in English, made, and Yotzer, which means molded, right? Like, what do you, in other words, and if you had to pick one to say, which one would you use?
Made.
Which one sounds better to you? Yotzer? Okay. Okay.
Molded and made.
They're two different things.
No, obviously, first you mold it, then you make it.
Oh, except but the problem is it goes in the order of making to mold. And nice try, though.
Making, yeah. I'm saying what I was
saying. Making is something about the big things.
No, no, and all the commentaries.
Making is about the big things, like making the world or whatever. And then molding is about molding the world into what you want it to be.
So you're saying, like, the first day you make
okay.
the world.
Okay, so hold on. We'll answer in a second. But I'll ask another question. What does it mean? What does it mean to say that every neshama, everyone will do it? Who do you think that includes? If I had to ask you,
non-Jews.
What? Right, not just a non-Jew, but even more than that. Which, by the way, David's bringing up a great point. By the way, when you're saying Malocha Kol Olam Kulu B'Chodecha, people forget about that. It's not a tefillah for Bnei Yisrael. It's a tefillah for us. You're not asking as a Jew. You're asking as a human. Whereas as a human being, we want God's kingship to be expressed over the entire world. It's not limited to just Jews. It's not like a religious thing. It's more like a human thing that we're created. But anyway, so, but who else would it call Hashem Shabbat Bebo include?
Heretics.
What?
Heretics.
Okay, Russia. All right? So it's not me who says this. Zuzumi Yavad Ram says, first he says it this, interesting, he says, the reason why we say this, this idea of God being Yotzer about making and molding, the reason is that since you are the judge of the world, for those deserving, those meriting, the world will know and understand their being made and molded. For if you did not judge them, they would say that God has abandoned the world and is not a judge, but everything happens by chance. Powerful, right? I mean, if you think about it, I'm gonna be a little devil's advocate for a second, right? We know that Yom HaDin is the day that we are judged, let's say, for the year, right? But the question is that, where do you see the effects of Din on a daily basis?
We don't.
It doesn't seem like we do, right?
Because we don't understand justice.
What? Okay, hold on, that's true, but don't you feel like then you're just awash in a sea of chance?
I mean, I can like call out things that happened to me that are bad and be like, darn, it was probably because I did that sin before. But, you know, I can't be right either.
Well, it's not that you can't be right, just you can't say with certainty. Right, there's no way to know for sure. So then it's very challenging. Like, where's this expression of judgment that we're talking about?
I think it's like, whether we judge on a daily basis by our...
You mean, where? You mean, You mean like, v'chol ba'imaram, that all of us stand, like, walk one by one?
No, there's a question which has the question, are we judged yearly, are we judged...
Yeah. So I mentioned, I'm saying let's assume it's a judgment for the year, whatever that means. Okay, like, because again, it's funny to apply time to. But
the only expression you never think of death.
Okay.
Because we relates to Jewish theology, we generally hold that that's a judgment.
Okay. Okay. Yes, John.
In regards to the before, it's a good question. Isn't it? Don't some people hold though that the sins you've done here will not affect you on this world, be the next world that will affect you?
I don't know what that means. What does that mean affects you in the next world? You mean like they're put in a safe? And then like when you die, the safe opens and poof, comes out?
No, it's that like you won't be punished for it now. It's not the idea that you're going to be... It's the fact
you do get punished now. Depends which theologian you want to line up behind. The Ramban says that every time you're punished here, right? You know what happens?
Seems different when you're punished.
Yeah, there's some sort of scale system, right? But the Ramban would say no. The Ramban would say that when you do a sin here, what happens? Your soul is tainted, right? So it's going to affect your status in Olam Haba, all right? I'm just saying, I don't know, it's like that's a bigger issue, like how that works. I'm not interested in the mechanics of that for now. Alright, so let's do the first thing. What's the difference between being made and being molded? Let's start with that. There's an actual big difference between the two. What's made and what's molded? We guys are saying it, yes, Shimon.
I feel like molded is like a more planned process.
Okay.
It's more thought out, I guess more intricate, because like, just regarding, I mean, I guess it could be just the mold in general, if you're using, I feel like molding is just very, if you're molding something, you're, really going all the details. Making is kind of just,
All right, but you already, I agree, but you already said the answer in what you just said. I don't know if you realize it. There's something in what you just said that I see. I'm going to point a word that you said in what you said that'll bring out what I'm trying to say. I used the word said six times last time. No, don't try and guess. Yes.
If you make something, then you're, tweaking until you get it right. If you casting metal, you cast it in a mold. That's complete. Right?
Okay, I don't know, but I would argue what your assessment of making is. Yes, Naftali.
So if you go, if you look at the order of creation according to Judaic theology, then you see that first. Well, I don't know. It doesn't say in the gracious that the world was created, but let's assume that God created the world. And,
obviously, this whole conversation we can't lay out all these assumptions every time we have a philosophical conversation. Assuming you believe in all of it. Now, yes.
Okay. Well, it doesn't say that Hashem created the world in the Torah. Okay. It says there was the
Go on. Get to the point.
Okay, that's just,
let's just use normative Jewish theology. Is that better? Okay, good.
So he created the world and then he slowly molded it out, meaning he added this and that, perfected it, slowly then it's...
Okay, fine. Okay. Oh, no, no, no. That, I, not, okay, okay. Yes, Josh. Yeah.
Raising is making something that does not sinful. Molding is manipulating something which is...
Right. That, I like what Josh is saying. I like what Josh is saying. Yes, Momo.
I feel like molding refers to
okay.
And making means like you make cookies, you add ingredients together. You don't just mix things.
Okay, I agree. I think you're saying some of what Josh is saying.
I didn't really say this just because the mold is a stronger verb and it's more specific of what you're doing.
No, maybe. Yes, David.
Okay, I think making is really starting from nothing and making something. Right, not having anything to begin with, because this is what God can do about creation.
Okay.
And molding is when people and God also at times could come take different things already there and combine them together.
Okay, good. Okay, yes, John?
So, I mean, to me, it was always that God created us, God has made us, and now throughout our lives he's going to mold us, he's going to make us in the image that he wants us to be,
yeah.
To be the best version of us, and he's going to guide us through that path.
Well, slow down. One more time.
Yeah, I know if you're well, buddy.
Well, no, not that he's the guy, not the ship.
Make versus mold. That's all I want to know.
Yeah,
making
no.
is...
In making is, he created us. Created.
Yeah.
Molding is that he makes us now the best we can, helps us become the best we can be of ourselves.
How does he do that? We're responsible for that. Not God. We need to make ourselves the best we can.
Not guys. Without the Torah, I'm learning about it.
Well, yeah, sort of, but it's not like he's pulling our strings. Like we
no,
need to, we need to on our own.
He gives you the path. He drives us. Here's the path.
Okay, hold on. Yeah, yes, Steve. Good. That's true. Tzura was your first form.
No.
I don't know. Let's say yes. I don't know. Maybe. Is Josh raising his hand? What would you call him? I mean, I'm not sure. How is this a hand raise? It's like the case of my Makos, right? It's like you're lowering your hand to raise it. Go. Yes. Yes, Josh Harwitz. Oh, Josh.
Creating is making something which wasn't already there, and molding is manipulating it into something else.
Right. I agree with that. See, I think we can apply that to ourselves. Okay? How? So I think the idea of making is that we share, what do we share in common with everything else in the universe?
We are made of matter.
No, that's true. But we were created. Okay? We were created. Because we all share a similar quality with every hydrogen atom. Let's put aside the way we relate to ourselves categorically, but what we share in common with every hydrogen atom and every animal and what?
Oh, I think I had one. I just wanted to.
Oh, yeah?
I was actually positive that making would be making and molding is making is that we have something is either a thing or not a thing, so making would be that we're turned into a thing.
Okay.
Right, which would be our essence, and then molding would be our accidents. Whereas
okay. Right, I hear. Okay. But I'm a little bit different. Like, I want to say what Josh is saying, but I want to apply it to us. I want to say that you see, as human, as creatures, right, we all share a characteristic with everything else in the universe, which we have the quality of being created, right? We share that in common with everything. There's the difference between you and I mean, in fact, in some sense, we're just a collection of atoms, but the difference between you and this bottle, right? Well, yeah, even this bottle, but the bottle, is that they both are created. All right. I mean, the bottle's not the best example. It's not the best example, but I'm saying there's a certain idea, there's a certain universal quality that we all have called we are created. Okay, I mean, we're made from nothing, so to speak. We came about. And I would say, when you were saying before, when you make a model airplane, what do? You take the parts, and then after you put them all together, what emerges from that? The model airplane. Or you've created now the plane. Okay, but like Shimon used the word something before. So you mold something, meaning...
That was the word.
Yeah. You gave it away. Because what I'm saying is that how does molding, you know, one way
it's
we view is
something where he meant to mold. Like you mold.
Yeah, right.
But
what
way.
Makes? But what did he do to man? Or is this the other part? There's on the one hand where we share this interesting duality, and the Rav talks about this a lot. On the one hand, we're created beings. Okay. In fact, I'll tell you what the Rav says in a second. But on the one hand, we're created beings. On the other hand, when the idea of molding means what did he do with man versus everything else?
He has a sense of detail.
What?
He has a sense of attention.
In the physical world also.
What do you mean a source in the physical world?
We're not, I mean, like, every other things were created, like, yes, and I, in a sense.
Okay.
What was created in that way? Our soul was, but now we learn how to create work. We have some kind of physical aspect.
Why the physical aspect? Why don't you say the opposite? We have a non-physical aspect.
No,
it sounds like him.
No,
I understand that, but I'm saying that, like, in other words, within the created, there's within the created beings, God took man and separated him out.
Yeah.
You exist on a certain level.
Yeah.
You're different. Right. So what it's saying is that when we give the shev, when we talk about the idea that everyone should proclaim God as king, we're talking from ourselves, both from an identity as being a created being and as the unique perch that man stands on. And I'll give you, the Rav breaks his point from whatever, Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, but he says that's the very tension that exists by tefillah. So that's meant to be a good ending point. But when you're davening, okay, what you have to realize is that davening, it's an interesting phenomenon. To daven. Why? Because there's a tension that exists. On the one hand, right, since we're a created being, what gives us the right to stand before the Creator and ask for anything? We're as we say, we're Afar v'Efer, we're nothing, right? And now that we know, and that statement was made when the knowledge of the universe, when people thought the universe was like that big. looking at how big the universe is now, right, which is, you know, we use words like trillions, which as a number you can't actually ever picture in your brain. It's an absurd number. So where are we? What are we? We're like nothing, right? I mean, really insignificant. That's the idea of being made, of a created being. Right? So we have no right to ask God for anything. On the other hand, what did God give us that doesn't, that as far as we know right now, we human beings have? What? What do you mean by tsura? Well, because what do you mean by form? You mean because we walk? I don't think this means that. Right. Okay. Right. Exactly. In other words, we have. Right. I mean, let's tell him again.
There's supposed to be a physical appearance.
No. I don't have to use it. He gives it tzalam alakim, and because we have a tzalam alakim, that gives us the right to ask God to stand before God and say, "Listen, well, what do you call it? We have needs. We demand." If you look at the slichos, you know, if you know, I mean, if you guys are reading in English, you have this in the slichos. You also have this like amazing. This tension that exists. On the one hand, we say we're terrible people, we stink. On the other hand, we make these demands on God. God, what's going on here? You know, we're like, you need to step up. What? It's pretty close to demands. Like I was telling Josh last night. That's the reason why. If you notice, it's a funny thing. It's like the Python wrote all these demands on God, and then that's what said, you know what, that's a little too strong, so we're going to put a lie in front. It's an interesting idea. The reason why a lie is because you can't say with certainty that God must act. The most you could say is, you could say that, listen, hopefully we'll merit a response from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but you have no right to say, you know, it must be this way. So I think that's the idea here. The idea here is that you have to see yourselves. And if you see yourself in an honest way, you'll see that you share both qualities. On the one hand, you're a collection of atoms. When we get into identity and materialism, you'll understand what that idea is. We're just a sack of meat. We're just a collection of atoms. That's a created being. On the other hand, we also have this thing called a mind and a soul, whatever you want to call it, that differentiates us from everything that we know of up to this point. And as a result of that, we see ourselves in that way also. So the totality is that whether you're a created being, whether you're coming from the atomic standpoint or from the standpoint of man being a unique creature, no matter what will we come to do? Right, we'll come to give Shabbat to Kadosh Baruch Hu as Melech. Okay, so I think that's the main drive in this tefillah, and that's why it includes the Russia, because even no matter how bad okay the guy is, and I don't even like using that caricature. But no matter how bad the guy is, right? Ultimately, a Russia has the same thing that every human has. What does he have? He has the Talmud Kim. He has the ability to access Chachma and to approach God properly. So I think that's the idea in this paragraph. That's what I thought. Okay, so here's my recommendation. Okay, I know I gave you two other pages. It's a good time, not right now, but in general, take some time today. Look at the paragraph on Zichronos. I'll even throw out some questions to you. Okay, what does it mean to say Zichronos means what?
Remembrance.
How can we ever use the term remember? I'm not going to answer this. I want you guys to think about it. How can you ever use the term remember to describe God? What's the inherent problem with saying that God remembers? Exactly. Right? If God remembers, you only remember something if you're capable of what? Forgetting something. So how can we even term this as remembrance? The very assumption that God remembers itself sounds heretical, right? I mean, just how do you answer that? Look at the first paragraph, okay?
It's not about forgetting, it's about actually thinking about it.
Like, okay. Also, you'll see again a similar format, which is literary, in Zichronos, where the tefillah says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Zocher and he's Poke. Okay? For those people who are Bali Kriya in the landing on Thursday, what are we going to say? V'Hashem?
Pakad,
as such. That's okay. That's one idea of remembering, but it's also Zahar, Vayizkor Elokim es Noach, that God remembered. They both mean in English the same exact thing. So again, the question is, why in this tefillah is a difference between Zocher and Poke? Think about that. Look at that tefillah and see if you can find out what does it mean that God remembers. What does that even mean? Because that sounds like a defective God, Chas v'Chalila. And also, what's the difference between Zocher and Poke? Again, using these synonymous terms, but you'll see if you think about it, they're not truly synonymous. All right. Any questions? Is that...